Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Now you listen here. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Now go away.
Who are you?
I'm his mother, that's who.
Behold his mother. Behold his mother. Hail to thee, mother of glory. Blessed art thou. Hosanna. All praise to thee. Now and always.
Now, don't think you can get around me like that. He's not.
Now, just a little more than an hour ago, the death was announced of the Monty Python star, Terry Jones, who had been suffering from dementia for the last few years. He was 77. On the line is his old friend and fellow Python, Terry Gilliam. Terry, good afternoon.
Hello.
We've just heard the news that Terry Jones has died.
Yes, and strangely enough, I was just trying to sit down and write something what I'm going to say about Terry, which is always very hard. Because Terry didn't fit neatly into any little box.
Yes, I suppose. He wasn't just a member of the Pythons. He was something of a polymath. Would that be a fair description of him?
Oh, there's nothing that Terry wasn't interested in. Let's put it that way. History was very important. You know, he actually wrote a book that disturbed all the proper academics about the Knight's Tale. Terry had a mind that was just searching always for anything. And he was always looking for what's wrong with the world and railing about it and trying to find ways of putting it better.
And that book was called Who Killed Chaucer? And it was co-written by Terry Dolan, who was a contributor to this program for many years. He was a professor of English in UCD, and he died last year, sadly, after he...
All of us Terrys are going. I think my days are numbered.
Yeah, this is actually three Terrys here. It's a kind of complicated story to tell. When was the last time you had any communication with Terry Jones?
Well, I hadn't seen Terry for several months, because when I did meet him... In fact, I know what it was. Actually, the last time I saw him was at our attempt to break the record of the number of Gumbies. Gumbies gathered in one place. And Terry was there, and Terry was there physically, but I'm not sure if he was there mentally, because the dementia had really taken its toll on Terry. So the person I've known for the last year is not the person I knew for all those 50 years before.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing, particularly for people with dementia, that all the people who knew them and loved them, you kind of see the lights go out over a gradual period.
Yeah, it was just very sad, because, you know, I look in his eyes and I don't know who I'm looking at anymore, and he doesn't know who he's looking at. And the energy, which was so central to Terry, I mean, he was just a fireball, and you couldn't keep him down, and he basically... He looked great for the last year. He looked fantastic, but he wasn't Terry anymore, because the what really made him Terry was not his body. It was his incredible mind.
Yeah. Yeah, that is sad. Shall we talk about your film then?
What's that?
What's that?
That's for the living, I still am. Yes.
The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. I've read an awful lot about the trials that you had to go through to finally get this to a screen. There were the money problems and legal problems and various cast actors and mudslides and NATO planes and all sorts of things. Is there something about you that you just wouldn't give up on this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea of being a realist seems horrible, really depressing. And since I was surrounded by so many realistic, pragmatic people who insisted just walk away from it, I can't. Once I'm kind of, I don't even think it's an obsession. It was possibly a possession. I think Quixote was determined to get made into a film again, and I was the victim.
And when you originally were going to make the film, did you know exactly what the film was going to be?
Nope. I had got the money, and then I read the book and realized, well, I've got a problem here. Yes, the book is vast, and it's wonderful. And so there's been many versions of the script all over the years. But the final version, I really do think, was the best one. And that's the sense the film was waiting till we got the script right before it allowed itself to be made.
Okay, so there's a kind of a fortunate aspect to that.
Yeah. No, it's the thing is, Tony Grisoni and I, who had been involved on the script for 20-some years, the thing, each time it got close to being a reality that we were getting the money to make it, we would look at it again, and rather than just sitting there thinking this is the most perfect script ever written, that wasn't our attitude. We always knew there were things that could be improved, things that would be a better way of telling this story. And it was finally at the end when we had our main character, that is Adam Driver, who was a young filmmaker, having made a film called The Man Who Killed Don Quixote 10 years earlier, when he was still full of optimism and kind of purity of talent. And then years later, coming back to meet all villagers in this little Spanish village that he had had such a great time making the film, and what that process had done to them, not what it had done to him, but he lives been turned inside out and upside down. And in fact, the little shoemaker who played Quixote in the film had become completely mad and believed he was Don Quixote. So it was a very clever way of talking about the modern world and the world of Quixote at the same time, and not having to have it all take place in the 17th century.
Mm. And so Adam Driver's part, is he kind of playing two versions of that character, the one 10 years ago and the one now?
Yep. And he's brilliant at it. I mean, there's hardly any makeup to make the difference. It's all Adam. He's such an extraordinary actor. He just inhabits this younger character with all of his enthusiasm and joy of the idea of filmmaking. And it almost changes him physically. That's what's interesting. We didn't have to do what Marty Scorsese did in The Irishman, trying to make De Niro much younger.
So we do a movie review thing on a Friday, and that every week there's a row about that, whether that was... what do you think? Did you think that detracted from the film?
No, I didn't think it detracted. I think my only criticism was, they got the faces looking better, but the bodies didn't move like younger men.
Mm.
I think they needed some you know, people doing, I mean, not motion control, but movement directing to try to get Bobby to dance a bit more. You know, so when he moved as a younger man, he wouldn't move like an old man. That's my criticism. I thought the faces worked pretty well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people chimed with that criticism of it as well. Now, am I right in this that you would the movie was wrapped a couple of years ago, but it's been held up by various legal problems until now?
Yeah, what happened over the 30 years it's taken me from then when I began to now, we had a Portuguese producer involved for 4 months. And he was convinced he was the only one that could ever make it. And when he failed totally to raise the money and pulled the plug on the whole project, and we were able to bring it back together again, refinance it, and make it, he decided he would then try to destroy the film. He was trying to be the man who killed Don Quixote, or killed the man the man who killed Don Quixote. And it's been absolutely insane. And he actually frightened away a lot of key distributors, which was a big problem.
Mm.
Amazon were originally financing it for America and the UK. They ran away. And so we were dealing with distributors that were frightened to release the film because they thought they'd be sued. We've still got a few court cases still standing that haven't quite been resolved. So he made it a nightmare, but finally we got a distributor here in the UK and Ireland brave enough to take on the project, and here we are.
Right, okay. And do you have a distributor in the States?
Sorry?
Do you have a distributor in the US yet?
Yeah, it's been out in the U.S.
All right, okay.
It was terrible. The distribution was utterly horrible. And so many people in the States still don't think it's come out. It's actually available on a terrible streaming system already. And it's out on DVDs in the States. But as far as the cinema went, it was a complete catastrophe. The distributor was just unbearably bad.
Oh, crikey. Well, that's probably then why not a nod at the Oscars or anything of that nature, or did it come out at the wrong time?
No, I mean, the American distributor didn't want to do anything about even that. There's a problem at the moment right now with independent distributors. They're really struggling. They don't have money now because they're competing with Netflix, which is busy scooping up everything. And they're dealing with big films like Star Wars and the Avengers, who are scooping up all the money to make movies and to sell movies, because Avengers can pay like $80 million to promote their movie. Independent producer or distributor, I mean, is lucky to have 50,000 quid to do something. There's a big difference. I mean, we're talking about millions against thousands. And to get audiences in is very difficult. And that's why, I mean, I'm one of the lucky ones because, you know, I've got a healthy fan base and I'm still alive and making noise, so I can get news coverage.
But for the future, for your next project, is it more likely you have to go to a streaming service to try and...
Well, it probably will be. I mean, I don't have a next project at the moment, but yes, that's probably where one is going. That's why Marty Scorsese is gone that way, you know, Alfonso Cuarón. It's what you do now. All filmmakers do the same thing. We go where the money is.
Mm.
And the idea of doing it, that it will not be seen on a big screen, is my problem. I don't like that. I make films for the big screen. Luckily, people's TVs are getting much larger, so if they sit very close, they can almost have a cinema scale experience, but they don't get the experience of sitting with an audience of other people all enjoying the experience together, which is, to me, so important. The sense of community when you're sharing something together is very important. With streaming, you watch it alone in your little house, and since there's so much being streamed, the next day you go out and start talking about the thing you just watched, nobody's seen it. They were streaming something else.
Yeah.
So I worry that this is an unraveling of our civilization, because, like the case with Monty Python, when we would go out, there were only three channels then, and in the UK, and you go out on a Sunday night, and on Monday morning, everybody around the water cooler at work is talking about the same thing and arguing about it. Those who liked Python, those who didn't like it, but it was something to argue about in common, and that's disappearing.
You say you don't have you don't know what your next project's going to be. Do you have a kind of a process where you're maybe toying with various ideas? Are you going back to ideas you had before, or just waiting for something to hit?
Basically,
you?
I basically go into a deep depression, and then if I wait long enough, I'm patient enough, I get to the bottom of the well, and I'm down there, and there's nowhere lower to go, and then I start rising back up. I haven't hit bottom yet at the moment.
Okay, all right, because you do sound unnecessarily cheerful for a man in a depression.
Well, that's just my public face. My wife sees the real face.
Right.
She hears what a miserable bastard I am, sitting there staring at my computer 24 hours a day, wondering when something's going to happen in my life.
Now, it's been reported on a gazillion times before about how you moved from the States because you became somewhat disillusioned with life in the United States. Though now that has Britain become the same thing politically?
In many ways, yes. I mean, it was funny. I renounced my American citizenship 13 years ago, and I was on probation for 10 years. I couldn't go back to the States more than 30 days in any one year, which I had no intention of going back, but it did actually stop my Hollywood career. And hard to make movies when you can only turn up in California 30 days a year. Anyway, my probation period ended finally, and I was 100% British, which to me, that was being 100% European. And that was 2016, when the Brexit referendum happened.
Oh, dear.
And so, yes, I am very disillusioned. It's not the country I came to. I live here, and I still love all my friends in the world, but it's not the same place. The joy has gone out of Britain, I think. And I'm despairing about what the future is going to be like, because I fear that most of the people who voted for Brexit are going to be the ones that suffer the most.
Yeah, indeed. Terry, thank you so much for speaking with us today. The movie's called The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. It'll hit cinemas in Ireland on the 31st of January. Terry Gilliam, thank you very much.
Thanks. And I would like to become an Irish citizen, because you guys are still European.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's who I am. Irish, English and Dutch is my DNA.
Yes, everybody's Irish in some respect or another. Okay, Terry, thanks a million. Take care.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.